right, this is Pure Decking, show number 514 for Thursday. What is it? April the 6th, 1933. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and enjoying the smell of plastic fumes in the morning. Morps, tonight I am drinking a bourbon barrel ale, which I will then be following it up with a shot of Devil's Cut. And had a fun little experience when I was getting the shot glass down from the cabinet to pour this shot of Devil's Cut. It slipped out of my hand, and I have granite countertop, so it's like, this thing's about to shatter. And this is a Kentucky Down Under shot glass, so it wouldn't have been a terrible loss. It's actually pretty scuffed up when most of the letters are scratched off, but, you know, glass everywhere would kind of suck. And I had something happen that hadn't happened in a while. Time slowed down. You know, the adrenaline kicked in, and I caught it.
Nice.
It's just like, I haven't had time slow down like that in a long time. So it's always fun when it happens, but, you know, it's like, man, it'd be great to be able to do that on command. But anyways, we have an RU. What's up, RU?
Well, internet provider's being a dick today, so apologies to everyone.
When was the last time you controlled the speed of time?
Oh, dude. Where, probably before my accident. I don't have the reflexes anymore or anything.
And we have a madman. Madman, when was the last time you affected the flow of time, with or without the aid of chemicals?
It was a few Pathfinder games ago, and I got a little sick to my stomach. The chemical aid does not agree with me.
You turned fucking gray, man. It was weird.
Yeah, it does not agree with me at all.
So, but anyways, I guess we can get going here. No dojo tonight. I wasn't able to find anything that I thought was up to snuff. So, there's no dojo. We run out. We run out. And well, that's what happens. So we're going to start with this article from the Statesman, sbstatesman.com. It's an opinion piece, but it's covering an event that happened mid last week. If we lose the Internet Archive, we're screwed. If you've ever researched anything online, you've probably used the Internet Archive. The IA, founded in 1996 by librarian and engineer Brewster Colley, described itself as a, quote, non-profit library of millions of free books, movies, software, music, websites, and more, unquote. Their annuals include 37 million books, many of which are old tomes that aren't commercially available. It has classic films, plenty of podcasts, and its Wayback Machine has just about every deleted web page ever. Not true, but it's still incredibly useful. Four corporate publishers have a big problem with this, so they've sued the Internet Archive. And Hachette versus Internet Archive, the Hachette Publishing Group, Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, and Wiley have alleged that the Internet Archive is committing copyright infringement. And now a federal judge has ruled in the publisher's favor. The IA is appealing the decision. When Julius Caesar burned the Library of Alexandria, it was hard to imagine a greater destruction of scholarship. Now, 2,000 years later, some petty litigious schmucks are ready to deal an even bigger blow to literary canon. This is a fundamental strike against taxpayer-funded services by corporations and private individuals. While Hachette and other publishers ultimately formed the assault on IA, novelists were cheering them on. Novelist Chuck Winding disingenuously criticized the IA emergency library, saying that, quote, artists get no safety net, unquote, and pointed out unemployment and health care costs for writers. The IA is undoubtedly a great for scholarship and literacy. It might be an objective contender for the best site on the World Wide Web. And it's not just the author's word. As an idiocentric scholar of genealogy, history, and media, organizations from Boston Public Library and Trent University in Ontario to WorldCat and OCLC collaborate with the Internet Archive to preserve oodles of books. The IA doesn't even require a library card. If you have Internet access, you can use it. So I'm going to skip the rest of this guy's write-up here. The court case focused on the fact that while the Internet Archive is a library, they make a lot of their stuff available as ebooks, including books that were not ever published as ebooks. And they weren't putting any caps on how many books could be quote unquote checked out from Internet Archive at a time. When during COVID, they spun up what they called the emergency library, which is what they said an author was, because several libraries were closed due to the pandemic. If you've ever rented ebooks through a library, they actually have a limited number of them, and it's kind of a legal precedent that they can lend out a number of electronic books equal to the number of the physical copies that they own. The lawsuit effectively found that Internet Archive was not respecting limits for electronic lending, which is probably true, but they had kind of a novel idea that, well, since these other libraries were shut down, we were just using their books too. I don't know how well that really flies, but again, Internet Archive was trying to make knowledge available during a pandemic, so you kind of think there'd be some leniency there. But the other big thing they were doing is they were digitizing books. And the court found that these were not just a republication of these were not the same book, that these were derivative works that had to be authorized by the copyright holder. And since copyright law is already insane in this country, like life of the author plus, what did we say it was, 70 years the other day?
Yeah, it's like 70 years.
I mean,
the author's dead.
I liked the idea we came up with when we were talking about it the other day of copyright term should be, 10 years after you've stopped publishing it. So as long as you're using it, you have copyright, but the moment you stop using it for a decade, it goes public domain. I think that would probably be you suggested a maximum cap of like 100 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything that's 100 years old or less automatically in public domain, and, if they quit publishing it for more than 10 years, it goes into public domain, which I thought was a great way to do it. Because if you're actively using it commercially, yeah, you get to keep your protections on it. But if you quit using it for a decade, well, guess what? So, obviously that would probably never get passed because you'd have way too many people who hoard copyrights who would, absolutely lose it with that kind of suggestion. But the problem with this is not that I agree or disagree with the publishers versus the idea of the Internet Library on rules on publishing ebooks, because I get it. If you put together a book, you want to get paid for it. If you publish books, you want to get paid for it. I think copyright law is in serious need of correcting here, but by declaring that the scanning of the old books means that they're derivative works and it's copyright infringement, this case, they're appealing it, but this case could kill Internet Archive. Because they could end up owing these publishers absurd amounts of money that they could never pay. And Internet Archive is kind of one of the last bastions of the old Internet. The kind of open, project-based, old-school message board, almost 90s Internet, right?
Yeah.
At that point, it's
a charity. They don't actually have money.
Right. Well, the publishers, I think, just want them to stop. But
so their argument is there's too many copies of a digital book being loaned out, right?
That's one of the copies.
That was initially an issue, and now they're claiming that digitizing a book is a derivative work.
And not just a book in a digital form. So
there's a modern monetary theory joke there. I just can't fucking find it yet.
Well, let me read this article, because they have this paragraph here. The plaintiffs are upset about AA because in 2020 they introduced the National Emergency Library, which made copyrighted books available for free during the pandemic. Publishers behind the lawsuit alleged that this entailed copyright infringement. The judge, who was hostile from the beginning, decided to rule in the plaintiff's favor. That's probably more complicated than that, but in essence, the federal judge ruled that ruled against a program benefiting American taxpayers, which multiple government-funded public libraries participate. So the Internet Archive is a library. They've gone through all the work. They've done the paperwork. They get funding as a library. But this lawsuit could shut them down because they're claiming copyright infringement for absurd amounts. And because the statutory damages for copyright infringement are huge, So here's the thing, though. If you kill Internet Archive financially, I mean, sure, somebody else might take it up and try to get it going again, but, you know, the Internet Archive argued their project was covered by fair use, as the emergency library provides text for education and scholarly purposes. So they were making a fair use argument, and they had some other interesting legal theories that I read. Those might not have came from from Internet Archive, because, like I said, I was skimming a lot through this and picked this article because it seemed like a decent one, and I kind of liked the Library of Alexandria comparison. But, you know, there were some other theories floating around about using other libraries' copies while they were shut down and things like that. But if they kill it, I mean, that's kind of it. The old internet is basically dead at that point, and it's now all commercial all of the time. You know, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, get used to it. The old internet, that, you know, message boards and all the stuff from the old days that was fun is all gone. It's now nothing but another commercial channel.
Did you say 3.0?
No, I think the Metaverse guys claimed Web 3.0, so we'd have to call it Web Sad or something like that. So, but
well, I hope they don't win.
Well, they did win,
because I use it.
Now, AIA is appealing it, but I mean, you know, yeah. The Internet Archive is good for literacy, good for blah, 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 blah. Federal court decision is a victory for corporations, disaster. If the decision isn't reversed, human beings will lose more knowledge than the Library of Alexandria ever contained. If the appeal fails, it'll be a tragedy of historical proportions. So, yes, I picked an opinionated piece for this discussion, but that's one, I kind of agree with the opinion. But two, you know, there's already a lot of other articles examining this, but yeah, I mean, this is kind of one of the last bastions of the old open internet that kind of existed more for, you know, entertainment, literacy, learning, as opposed to buying shit on Amazon and Steam, I guess.
Well, Steam's commercial.
Well, that's my point, though, is that the internet is basically going to be completely commercial if things like Internet Archive are killed, right? I mean, that's kind of it. And don't kid yourself, all the social media sites are all commercial as well.
Oh, yeah. Getting closer to life by subscription. Which is bullshit.
Al-Hazard, I mean, yeah, could they shut it down even? Yeah, sure, they could go pirate and try to run it, but I mean, they've got too many ties to legitimate organizations. If they kill it, sure, somebody could try to take a backup of it, but when you're moving that much data, physics get involved. So if somebody kills
Internet
that
Archive
organization,
hasn't been able to save everything,
yeah,
because a lot of times they just didn't get enough warning that a site was going to go.
Go ahead, Mabin.
And now you're talking about, let's try to back that up. We would need a shit ton of warning, and I don't know of a single individual that would have enough space. You're talking about corporate sponsorship of backing this up.
Yeah, if they kill that organization, I mean, you might be able to grab chunks of it and run it on things like I2P and Tor, but that's still kind of it, you know what I mean? Because at that point, it's commercial and pirate. That's it. You know, there won't be any more education. I mean, Internet Archive is... And again, I say that not because Internet Archive is the only site out there that, you know, works on education, because I know you've got Khan Academy, you know, several other courses that are out there, you know, other video archives and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of kills the case for legal archivists on the internet. That's it. That kills it. Because they're saying, nope, copyright applies, you're not a library, you're distributing ebooks, that's infringement. Which means everyone else trying to be a digital archive is effectively immediately a pirate site. And subject to all the legal shenanigans and fun that being a pirate site entails. So, I mean, yeah, you're kind of looking at the victory of the commercial site over everything else online. Is that good or bad? You can judge that for yourself, but I kind of liked the Internet Archive. I hate to see it go away. I hate to see that model go away because it means that the idea of a digital library is basically dead. They are the digital libraries will have their rules subject to copyright holders, period. There will be no library exception online, period, if Internet Archive goes down. Yeah, a lot of libraries operate digital libraries. You think they're not all going to immediately change their rules if IE really goes away?
No.
With the digital library, though, I think this suit wasn't just that they were giving out ebooks. They had ebooks that were never released as ebooks.
Correct.
And the digital libraries operated by, like, my library, they only offer ebooks that are released as ebooks.
Well, right, and that's Internet Archive was trying to digitize books, and that they've decided, they said that was a derivative work, which, again, at its most basic level, yeah, it is, but is it really? I mean, yes, it's a derivative work, but you're not claiming ownership of it. You're not saying this is mine. You're just distributing it. Which, I guess that argument was already lost with the whole MP3 thing, ripping them off CDs back in the day, so.
And they're also probably looking at books that hadn't gone public domain yet.
Well, considering how long it takes for things to go to public domain, that's pretty likely.
Yeah. And I'm thinking also stuff that snapped back, because we have had it several times where things went public domain and then that copyright got extended and they were pulled out of public domain.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sucks because it's large chunks of culture that are basically locked down for 100 plus years.
It also kind of depends on the exact ruling for punishment. Because if they're just going after the books that they infringed, the archiving the internet part could stay up.
Well,
how much of that is actually statutory?
Damages. I'm worried about the copyright damages taking out the organization. You're right. There's probably no reason they couldn't keep up with the Wayback Machine and stuff that people have donated and stuff that's already in public domain or stuff that's always been in public domain or had a permissive license attached to it. A large part of their digital archives would probably be fine, legally speaking. But with the damages from a copyright lawsuit like that, I mean, I'm worried the organization is going to die.
Do you know how much of those damages are statutory and how much the judge has leeway on?
No, I do not. Hang on. Let's see if we can find that. Because, I mean, some of them, I think they were acting, some of the articles I saw said that they were trying to just get them to shut down. They weren't actually going for monetary damages, but others said that, they had some numbers. So, let's see if they reveal damages. Nope.
I think monetary damage is the only way to shut them down because these are people doing it out of a labor of love, not out of...
Yeah, The Verge has it here at the end of the Internet Archive loses the case. It could be potentially on the hook for billions of dollars in damages, which would threaten other parts of the operation like the Wayback Machine. So again, on Monday, for the largest grant summary judgment of the copyright lawsuit to shut down Internet Archive's online library and hold it liable for damages. So I was looking for the actual... I thought I saw one that actually had the numbers. And I'm not finding it now, but it's been a bit. The judge granted the case. The nonprofit said it's going to appeal. Do they actually have in the document damages? directed as proximate result of defendant's infringement. Plaintiffs are entitled to recover statutory damages pursuant to blah, blah, blah of each work infringed. Alternatively, elected to recover from the defendant the damages they've sustained and will sustain. So they're asking for everything from the statutory damages.
So there is this actual statute saying get X amount of dollars per infringement.
It's like $3,000 per infringement, which is each copy of each work. Or no, it's more than that. Oh, shit. It's absurdly large for a copyright.
Stop losing all those old movies.
Where is it? A sum of not less than $750 per work and not more than $30,000 per work.
So $750 per work is the minimum that they could be charged.
Yep. And most of the time they usually go for the $30,000 number. But I know, because I know back when we used to cover RIAA stuff, they would always ask for a settlement price that was usually just a little below what it would cost to defend them in court. So, but yeah, it's you know, given the Internet Archive and, you know, $30,000 per work, I mean...
Yeah, considering how much stuff they have.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at probably more money than exists on the planet.
Yep.
And since publishers have, you know, the four major publishers have basically bought up all the rest of them, they can probably find a way of claiming they own most of the stuff in there that's not more than 100 years old. So. Yeah, it's a bitch.
yeah.
You know, if they don't get their appeal granted, you're probably looking at the end of that organization, because they'll just have to bankrupt out of it because there's more money than they could ever raise on there to try to keep going. So now maybe they'll be able to pass off components of it to other organizations. Maybe there'll be ways to save it, but I mean, you're looking at a pretty good, you know, kick in the dick there. Hate to be that pessimistic about it, but I don't see. I mean, unless they get good luck on an appeal with their fair use argument, I don't know what else they're gonna do.
And I don't know. I'm trying to think what the argument would be on fair use for something that didn't actually exist. The I think the crutch of the publisher's argument was this isn't an ebook, so you don't have to. It can't be done
work.
Free use as an ebook.
They're saying it's for educational reasons, which is true. They're a library, so they can claim that. So it's for scholarly and education and, you know, historical preservation reasons that they're doing this, but. I mean, they can make the argument, but, I mean, we'll see. We'll see where their appeal ends up. Next story?
What's next in the world of depression?
What's next in the world of depression is actually pretty kind of funny from Tech Radar. Samsung workers made major error by using ChatGPT. Samsung meeting notes and source code are now in the wild after being leaked in ChatGPT. Samsung workers have unwittingly leaked top-secret data while using ChatGPT to help them with tasks. The company allowed engineers at its semiconductor arm to use the AI writer to help fix problems with their source code. In doing so, workers inputted confidential information, such as the source code itself for a new program, and internal meeting notes related to their hardware. The upshot is that in just under a month, there were 3 recorded instances of employees leaking sensitive information via ChatGPT. Since ChatGPT retains user input to further train itself, these trade secrets from Samsung are now effectively in the hands of OpenAI, the company behind the AI service. In response, Samsung Semiconductor is now developing its own in-house AI for internal use by employees, but they can only use prompts that are limited to 1,024 bytes in size. One of the aforementioned cases or in one of the aforementioned cases, employee asked ChatGPT to optimize test sequences for identifying faults in chips, which is confidential. However, making this process as efficient as possible has the potential to save chip firms considerable time in testing and verifying processors, leading to reductions in cost. In another case, the employee used ChatGPT to convert meeting notes into a presentation, the contents of which were obviously not something Samsung would have liked external third parties to have known. Samsung Electronics sent out a warning to its workers on the potential dangers of leaking confidential information in the wake of these incidents, saying that such data is impossible to retrieve as it is now stored on the servers belonging to OpenAI. In the semiconductor industry, where competition is fierce, any sort of data leak could spell disaster for the company in question. It doesn't seem as if Samsung has any recourse to request the retrieval or deletion of the sensitive data OpenAI now holds. Some have argued that this very fact makes ChatGPT non-compliant with the EU's GDPR, as this is one of the core tenets of the law governing how companies collect and use data. It's also one of the reasons why Italy has now banned the use of ChatGPT nationwide. So, for anybody who doubted that ChatGPT was keeping every bit of everything you put into it, there it is, because not even Samsung could get them to go in and delete something.
Yep.
So, I know we banned it at work. We had it blocked, and we had several marketing people bitching at us about it. And we're like, no. No, you're not using that. And so we were getting complaints about it, so we know people wanted to use it. We're a fucking bank. You're not using a fucking chatbot that records everything you type into it. I think it's I just
great.
Broke that, man.
Well, the fact that anybody had asked to have it at work.
I had people complain either at me that we blocked Netflix and that they needed that to do their job efficiently. It's like, how do you need Netflix to do your job efficiently? Well, when I'm sitting at my desk not doing anything, oh my God, you wrote that in an email. And you copied your boss because we said we needed your boss's approval on this. We didn't actually want your boss's approval because we weren't going to approve it. We wanted your boss to know you were asking for Netflix.
I'm just thinking, loan contracts are boilerplate. It doesn't matter what bank you go to get a mortgage from, the wording is all the exact same because banks don't keep those in the States. We sell them to the federal government. Contracts for just about any loan follow the same boilerplate no matter what bank you go to because it's already been established in law. If you break this particular contract phrase, we can sue you for all the shit you ever have and your firstborn child. So why the fuck do you need a bot to help you write a contract for a fucking loan?
It's not for contract, it's for marketing copy.
Oh. Oh, we're not creative enough to come up with a new slogan. We want to type it into ChatGPT, okay.
That's what I mean. You're either showing that you're completely incompetent, or that you could be doing twice as much work for half the amount of money.
Oh no, that they need to get rid of their marketing department and then just have somebody not on the bank network type shit into ChatGPT and email it to a VP for approval.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time I got an entire marketing department fired, so why not? God, I wish I was kidding. I felt terrible after that.
In marketing, who cares? They're like HR, they're not needed.
We'll talk after the show, because it's like, well, I just cost a bunch of people their jobs. Well, no, what they did cost them their jobs, but I caught them. So, it's like, great. Actually, it wasn't doing that was so bad. It was one of the other managers coming around saying, thanks for catching him doing that. You just got, 30 people fired. Wait, what?
Hey, do I get a bonus?
Yeah, really.
I just saved the company a shit ton of money.
Actually, I did. But, anyways, speaking of companies, I should have grabbed more stories. Speaking of companies misbehaving with data, this one's from Reuters, however you say it, to piss Major off.
No, I'm the one with the issue with that. It's Reuters.
This one's from the news organization that'll also clean out your toilet and help with that infected bowel, RoboRooter. Special report, Tesla workers shared sensitive information recorded by customer cars.
Imagine my shock.
Yeah, really. You want to know why I'm concerned about privacy collection on my fucking machines and phone and laptop? Here it is. Tesla Inc. assures its millions of electric car owners that it's their privacy, quote, is and will always be enormously important to us, unquote. Yeah, important is a wishy-washy word. It doesn't actually mean anything. At least not in a legal sense.
Oh, it means it's very important to me because I'm going to make money off this. And things that make me money are important to me.
Just as important as the pre-recorded voice saying your call is very important to us when you call customer service, right?
Oh, no. Your checking accounts are very important to us. Your actual data is important to me because if I don't have it, I can't sell it to somebody else.
Yeah. The cameras it builds into vehicles to assist driving, it notes on its website, quote, are designed from the ground up to protect your privacy, unquote. But between 2019 and 2022, groups of Tesla employees privately shared via an internal messaging system, sometimes highly invasive videos, and images recorded by the customer's car cameras, according to interviews by Reuters with 9 former employees. Some of the recordings caught Tesla customers in embarrassing situations. One ex-employee described a video of a man approaching a vehicle completely naked. Given how often people bang in cars, I mean...
Anyway. Oh, if it's in your garage and you forgot something in the back seat and just, you know, you're ready for bed, go out there and grab it. I can see it's possible to...
Also shared...
Don't catch more than you want to see.
Oh, yeah. Also shared crashes and road rage incidents. One crash video in 2021 showed a Tesla driving at high speed in a residential area, hitting a child riding a bike, according to another ex-employee. The child flew in one direction, the bike in another. The video spread around the Tesla office in San Mateo, California, via private one-on-one chats like wildfire, the ex-employee said. Well, yeah, everybody's like, check this shit out, right?
Yeah, I want to see that.
Other images were more mundane, such as pictures of dogs and funny road signs that employees made into memes by embellishing them with amusing captions or commentary before posting them in private group chats. While some postings were only shared between 2 employees, others could be seen by scores of them, according to several ex-employees. Tesla states in its online, quote, customer privacy notice, unquote, that its, quote, camera recordings remain anonymous and are not linked to you or your vehicle, unquote. But 7 former employees told Reuters that the computer program they used at work could show the location of the recordings, which potentially could reveal where a Tesla owner lived. One ex-employee also said that some recordings appeared to have been made when cars were parked and turned off. I'm being corrected in the chat. It's Reuters. R-O-Y-T-E-R-S. I'm not calling it Reuters forever, just for fun. One ex-employee also said that some recordings appeared to have been made when the cars were parked and turned off. Several years ago, Tesla would receive video recordings from its vehicles even when they were off if owners gave consent. It has since stopped doing so. Quote, we could see inside people's garages and their private properties, said another former employee. Let's say that a Tesla customer had something in their garage that was distinctive. You know, people would post those kinds of things, unquote.
I don't know, like top secret documents.
Well, we're talking about a Tesla, not a Corvette, so.
I'm just saying, man. If you think Tesla's bad, don't even think about looking at Ring, yeah.
Yeah, you think they're not sharing every fucking meme? I mean, you want to talk about somebody who's probably got a fantastic World Star channel.
Bad, and they know who's cheating on each other.
Mm-hmm. About 3 years ago, some employees stumbled upon and shared a video of a unique submersible vehicle parked inside a garage, according to 2 people who viewed it. Nicknamed Wet Nelly, the White Lotus E-Spirit sub had been featured in the 1977 James Bond film The Spy Who Loved Me. The vehicle's owner, The vehicle's owner, Tesla chief executive Elon Musk, who had bought it for about $968,000 at an auction in 2013. It's not clear whether Musk was aware of the video that had been shared. Musk did not respond to a request for comment. To report the story, Reuters contacted more than 300 former Tesla employees who had worked at the company over the past 9 years. and were involved in developing its self-driving system. More than a dozen agreed to answer questions, all speaking on the condition of anonymity. Well, to be fair, they're all anonymous sources. For all we know, they're making shit up. Probably yep. not. This sounds pretty plausible to me. But to be fair. Go ahead, Ari.
I'm not surprised that there's internal documents floating around of people's stuff. I wouldn't be able to help myself either.
Oh, sure.
Natural curiosity, but just be aware if you know, surveillance is everywhere.
Reuters wasn't able to obtain any of the shared videos or images, which ex-employees said they hadn't kept. Bullshit.
Bullshit.
They're not sharing those images because of the lawsuits. The news agency also wasn't able to determine if the practice of sharing recordings, which occurred within some parts of Tesla as recently as last year, continues today or how widespread it was. Some former employees contacted said the only sharing they observed was for legitimate work purposes, such as seeking assistance from colleagues or supervisors. Well, yeah, those weren't the fun ones. Nobody shared anything with them because they were boring or would be the ones to go complain to HR. Or they were the ones being made fun of on the memes and nobody wanted to deal with them. We had a chat room when we were changing systems when somebody was going to get access to it who... Yeah, that chat room got cleaned out because we didn't want them to see all the memes we had made of them. So, you know. Did have other people routinely asking about the that particular hip chat channel. It's like, what goes on in there? Bad Photoshops.
Nothing.
It's bad Photoshops and troubleshooting systems. It's like, oh, well, I think it's more than that. Why? Why do you think it's anything more than that? Because you guys are so secretive about it. No, we're really not. So, the sharing of sensitive videos illustrates one of the less noted features of artificial intelligence systems. They also require armies of human beings to help train machines to learn automated tasks such as driving. Since about 2016, Tesla has employed hundreds of people in Africa and later the United States to label images to help its cars learn how to recognize pedestrians, street signs, construction vehicles, garage doors, and other objects encountered on the road or at customers' houses. To accomplish that, data labelers were given access to thousands of videos or images recorded by car cameras that they would view and identify objects. Oh, God, can you imagine how monotonous that job would be? Street sign, it says this. Ball.
No, because I'm the terrible human being that would label some human beings as speed bump.
But can you imagine just having to sit there, type that in all day? Stop sign. Yellow light. Child. Child without bike. Blob flying through the air? Yep, another child. You know. Anyways, Tesla has been automating the process and shutting down a data labeling hub last year in San Mateo, California, but it continues to employ hundreds of data labelers in Buffalo, New York. In February, Tesla said the staff there had grown 54% over the previous 6 months to 675. Two ex-employees said they weren't bothered by the sharing of images, saying that customers had given their consent or that people had long ago given up on any reasonable expectation of keeping data private. Three others, however, said they were troubled by it. Quote, it was a breach of privacy, to be honest, and I always joked that I would never buy a Tesla after seeing how they treated some of these people, said one former employee. I kind of want to go up to people who I know own Teslas, and it's like, we're going to stage plays for your cameras because the people who work there are going to have to figure shit out. It's like, what are you doing? Fucking... We're recreating Avengers, but we're going to get the weirdest people we can who do not fit the roles and the wrong colors of paint. Saucy puppet shows for the Tesla car cameras.
That's what I'm thinking, dude. Yep. Have a bi-weekly fucking puppet show.
Quote, we're about to make a bunch of bored people's lives better.
Another said, quote, I'm bothered by it because the people who buy the car, I don't think they know that their privacy is, like, not respected. We could see them doing laundry and really intimate things. We could see their kids. Unquote. Why'd you say it like that? One former employee saw nothing wrong with sharing images, but described a function that allowed data labelers to view the location of the recordings on Google Maps as a, quote, massive invasion of privacy. I'm guessing it's all geotagged. David Choffs, executive director of the Cybersecurity and Privacy Institute at Northeastern University in Boston, called the sharing of sensitive videos and images by Tesla employees morally reprehensible. Quote, any normal human being would be appalled by this, he said, obviously having never worked in an office. He notes that circulating sensitive and personal content could be constructive as a violation of Tesla's own privacy policy, potentially resulting in intervention by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, which enforces federal laws related to consumer privacy. A spokesperson for the FTC said it doesn't comment on individual companies or their conduct. Okay, stop. You know, they went and talked to some professor who's obviously never worked in an office environment. These people don't see it as violating privacy. They just found a funny picture, put a caption on it, and threw it in Slack. I guarantee to you that's what 90% of it is. It's like, you know, here's some dude, you know, showing up in a jersey looking like the Scumbag Steve meme. And so they went and, you know, took that screenshot, memed it, threw it in Slack, and said, ha ha. And nobody probably batted an eye at it because they didn't think of anything of it. The people sharing the image probably don't really think about the fact that it's somebody's car in their garage and the guy doesn't know he's having his picture taken, you know?
Yeah.
So, especially because they're probably, you know, if you're sitting there labeling pictures all day long, you probably get desensitized to it pretty quickly. To develop self-driving car, blah, 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 blah. He goes on about the autopilot. I don't care about the autopilot. Is anybody surprised?
No.
I mean, what do you think these companies are doing with all this data? Hell, what do you think they're doing with the CAPTCHAs these days? You ever notice most of the CAPTCHAs are, you know, identify bridges, identify cars, identify crosswalks. Uh-huh. You're training fucking self-driving algorithms. That's what it's for.
Yep.
And most CAPTCHAs these days are going to be for training AI on image recognition.
Yeah.
They'll make games out of it and offer you, you know, a chance at winning a Bitcoin or something if you answer enough pictures correctly. And they'd probably have a lot of people doing it.
All right. So if it doesn't already know the answer, how's it verifying that I'm a human?
Because it's comparing it to, it's giving the same picture to like 30 other people and then taking whatever answers are they get the most often. It's basically throwing the same question out to a large number of people and then using statistical models to determine which answers were correct. So yes, if you get enough people in on the joke, you could potentially mess up the AI training. The problem is most people aren't in on the joke.
Yeah.
It's like, so why are you so good at Unix? Well, you know, I found this anime forum about people who post pictures of frogs. Somehow I feel like they should be involved. All right, let's do this floppy disk story and see where we are time-wise. This is from the New Jersey Monitor. RU sent me this story. A fight against floppy disks involves into a prison's rights crusade. As a paralegal, LaShawn Fitch had learned some weighty stuff, everything from the difference between de facto, de jure, and de novo to the proper way to file things in criminal, civil, administrative, and federal courts. But one of the biggest challenges he's faced has been how to find affordable, long-lasting word processor to keep floppy disks from corrupting and wiping out all of his work. Fitch has been incarcerated since 2014 at the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton, where laptops, flash drives, and other modern digital conveniences are banned as security risks. Now, he's on a crusade to get the State Department of Corrections to lift that ban. He filed a grievance with the system last fall seeking broader technology access for imprisoned people. After several terse responses from corrections officials saying they were researching the issue and a notice that those responses were final, yeah, we're looking into it, shut up. Fitch escalated his case in December to State Superior Court, where he hopes a judge will intervene. Quote, I'm only 32. So I didn't know what a word processor was till I got here, unquote, Fitch told the New Jersey Monitor. They're obsolete. It's time to change.
Wait a minute. Isn't Word a word processor?
Word processing program. What he's referring to are typewriters with screens on them.
Yeah. Ah, the electric typewriters. I never called them a word processor.
Well, there was kind of a weird middle ground between these things. They effectively are computers. They're just 1980s, you know, microcomputers. So they have about the same processing power as, say, an Apple II or a Commodore 64 kind of thing. Although they don't have the custom graphics chips because they're purpose designed. So you can edit your documents on them, save them on a floppy disk, and then when you hit print, it's typing them very quickly. So these things are actually kind of interesting when you look into them. I forget the video now, it's been a bit, but there was a particular model of them that somebody was writing their own software for and actually managed to make a fairly serviceable clone of Windows 95 on it. You know, it's an 8-bit processor with, like, you know, 16 kilobytes of RAM and ROM and a floppy drive, and usually that's about it. And the real challenge with those is usually finding one with a floppy drive that works, because they were built to a price point. So the drives in them are usually incredibly cheap and often proprietary. They often aren't, you know, you often can't just grab a standard PC drive and stick it in there. Identify chimneys. I don't know what Al Hazard is talking about in the IRC. Such a fight might seem surprising, considering how tightly access to digital tools is restricted behind bars. Even today, many people in prison rely on pen and paper to fight their cases and to communicate with the outside, with their only technological access being the occasional turn on a few internet-free computers in prison libraries. But as technology has evolved, so has access to it behind bars. In 2015, New Jersey prison officials made tablet computers available for incarcerated people to send email and videograms, download digital books, games, and music, and transfer money through a system called JPay. These concessions have recognized that incarceration's digital divide leaves many people who leave prison struggling to reintegrate, and that digital literacy can reduce recidivism. Oh, geez, I didn't even think about that. If you go into prison, you're not allowed to touch a computer, and you're in there for like 20 years?
Uh-huh.
Good
you're
God,
fucked.
Somebody went in the 90s, comes out today, and they think they're living in the Jetsons.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even think
Oh, good
about
luck
that.
Applying for a job. How many places do pen and paper applications anymore?
Very few. Battles like Fitch's have helped remove barriers to other modern mundanities like cell phone calls. Incarcerated people in New Jersey have long been barred from calling cell phone numbers, similarly because of security concerns, until Edward Grimes, who was incarcerated at the Trenton State Prison, took the Department of Corrections to court and won that right in 2017. Still, the digital tools available to people serving time are in short supply and in huge demand. The state prison in Trenton has 49 JPay kiosks for the 1,300 people incarcerated there. Technology in prison can also lag decades behind that on the outside. Quote, the courts went through a technological revolution with e-filing and all these new things that they got out there, and we're still stuck in the Stone Age, unquote, Fitch said. Fitch uses floppy disks and a word processor to store legal research and draft filings for himself and others at his prison. But floppy disks are easily corruptible, so one pass through a metal detector can wipe out weeks of work, he said. Yeah, I bet so. And word processors have become so antiquated that they don't last long and cost a lot, Fitch said. He paid $600 for his. Depending on the model, that might actually be cheap if you look up some of these retro machines on eBay. Because nobody kept them. It's not like the Commodores or the Amigas or the old Apples, where people
no,
kept
those
them because they loved those machines, right?
Those stepping stones.
Stepping stones, boat anchors. I mean, these things are heavy. Uh-huh. You know, they lived in the bottom of the closet. Somebody would find it and say, what the hell is this? Throw it out, you know, I mean. Quote, outside sources know that people in prison use them, so they end up price gouging you, unquote, he said. Quote, they only have a shelf's life of 6 months. I can't turn my word processor on if it's too hot in my cell because it'll turn all your words into gibberish. The first thing that goes is the keypads, so you've got to order the keypad. But the thing is, they won't let you order the stuff you need to fix it. It makes no sense. So it's like you have to roll the dice. I've seen guys buy word processors for $500, and it conked out on them in a week, unquote.
Ooh.
That would be frustrating. He added, quote, people that serve this much time don't have money like that. Stamps went up. Certified mail went up. The commissary went up. Everything went up. You know, welcome to inflation. But the only thing that didn't go up was the wages we make. It's terrible. The only thing we can do is right now is fight, unquote. Attorneys also increasingly provide discovery materials and other court-related information on flash drives instead of paper copies, but prison workers confiscate them, he said. Wandra Beltram of the Prison Policy Initiative said that making any sought-after service available inside prisons positively affects safety because it reduces incentive for black markets to develop. Like New Jersey, many states have partnered with telecom companies to bring tablet computers into prisons, but many offer sparse educational content and charge exorbitant prices for services like email that are free outside prisons, she added. Quote, if computers in prison are ever going to serve the needs of people there, we need more prisoners rather than private companies working on efforts to get computers inside, unquote, but Bertram said. The Department of Corrections spokeswoman Amy Z. Quinn, working in any part of the Department of Corrections with the last name of Quinn just means you're getting the worst of the worst on jokes, aren't you? Declined to comment on Fitch's complaint. Quote, the New Jersey Department of Corrections supports incarcerated persons' rights to communicate with family and friends and the use of technology to support education and rehabilitation programs in ways that enhance the safe and orderly operation of facilities, unquote, Quinn said. Quote, laptops, USB storage devices, and cell phones are not authorized for use by incarcerated persons due to safety and security shortcomings inherent in the technology used, unquote. Bill Sullivan leads the New Jersey Policemen's Benevolent Association Local 105, a union that represents more than 5,000 state correctional officers. Sullivan said there are legitimate security concerns about both flash drives and anything more sophisticated than word processors and typewriters. Flash drives can be used for other reasons besides legal research and preparation, and are so small they can be smuggled in and out of prison between incarcerated people, Sullivan said. As a correctional officer, he added, how am I going to look at them? I'll plug it in and it's going to be password protected, so I can't see if they have escape plans or child porn or gambling or whatever on there, unquote. And while CDs would be more modern floppy disk alternative, those can be broken into sharp edges or melted together into makeshift weapons, Sullivan said. Quote, that's why they're limited to those floppies, because you can't really do much damage with them, unquote, he said. Allowing people to have computers in their cells raises concerns about potential hacking and illicit internet use, Sullivan added. Quote, there's too many questions about what you can do with a computer, unquote, he said. Quote, there might be ways to make it Wi-Fi capable, like you might be able to pick up the Wi-Fi of the hotel across the street and then you're using your laptop for nefarious activities, unquote. Okay. Well, actually, on modern chips, it is fairly
hard. That's a fucking stretch.
Well, it is a bit of a stretch but modern system on a chip usually do have all that integrated. But I've still seen a lot of laptops where you can just open them up and take the Wi-Fi chip out.
That's what I would say if you're worried about that. I mean, it's an interesting story. I don't really have a thought either way on it.
I saw a video a while back about different devices that inmates were allowed to get. I think Techmoan. Because he had collected a bunch of devices, I think off eBay, that were all clear because, you know, the devices have to be clear in prisons. So he had like radio, tape player, television, and there were some gaming tablets they had. Just, you know, they were basically really crappy Android phones that they could use as MP3 players. But they, of course, didn't really have a phone in them. They were just, you know, a little tablet kind of thing. Almost like an old PDA. But it was so they could play games and play a little bit of music on them. And the games, they showed a few of them on the video I watched. I'm trying to remember now if that one was Techmoan or not, but I think it might have been. The games were like god-awful or bad ROM hacks and stuff like that. So it was
better than nothing.
It was better than nothing, but these companies were charging absurd amounts of money for, you know, a 1990s PDA, basically.
They got a captured audience, therefore they can command any price they want.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a slippery slope, but it sucks that they do that, but what I mean, you're not in there for fucking good behavior, are you? You're in there because you did something.
True, but I mean, this seems, especially when it comes to the legal side of things, it seems like a solvable problem when you just have, you know, a computer lab in the prison basically.
Well, the problem is, Morps, you get someone of your mind gets incarcerated, then fucking, you know, they're going to have an issue.
Yeah, because you're wanting to e-file, so that would require internet access to email. Because I was thinking, a lot of legal archives, you could just have a copy offline stored in the prison, as far as just digital law books.
Oh, yeah. Well, and as far as like letting the inmates store stuff that they're working on, right? I mean,
yeah.
You have them check out a laptop. Like a Chromebook or laptop or something, just take the fucking Wi-Fi chip out of it, right? Or at least clip the antennas. Like, you can open it up and cut the traces of the antennas if they're circuit board antennas, but most laptops, they actually have a little antenna up in the screen. You just cut the wire.
I would say you'd have to remove it altogether.
Yeah.
People with a lot of time on their hand will figure out how to open it up and resolder it.
I'm just saying you could check them in and out, right? It's like, you know, guard hands you the laptop. They're going to come back in 2 hours and take it back, sort of like they do razors, you know?
And I was just thinking, why do the laptop just have the whole computer lab? You have your own login to that computer.
Store it
and
on the server.
You only have access to it during the hours that you're on it.
Just have that all as its own little segmented thing off away from anything real. No internet,
and
no network.
Just like the next time one of your local schools is updating their computer lab, put in a bid for all their used shit.
Well, that's all government anyways, 90% of the time. So, yeah. I mean, let's see. Yep. Where was I in the article? Ron Pierce, a policy analyst with the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, said that the system too often denies incarcerated people rights because of security concerns that aren't rooted in reality. Quote, that's the go-to term. It's a security issue. And that the courts have really deferred to them on the security issues, unquote, Pierce said. Quote, but it's an issue of civil rights because if a person that's incarcerated has the right to access to the courts, unquote. Well, you know, but like RU said, you ain't in there because you're a nice guy who just fucked up. Usually, if you're that far into prison, you've done something.
Well, you're in prison. You're not in jail.
Right.
You know what I mean? You've been sentenced. You've been to trial. You've been sentenced. Now you're on appeal or something like that.
And
I mean, this is what I said. I don't have an argument for this either way. I haven't had enough time to think about it. But there should be two categories, prison and jail. I mean, I think in prison you should have access to decent hardware. It needed to be modified to the shit so it didn't become a security. Now, jail, outright no.
I'd be thinking it'd be the opposite, because jail, you're actually still innocent and working on your defense. Prison, you've been found guilty.
Yeah, at that point, you're doing appeals and stuff if you're even participating.
As I said, I haven't thought enough about it. Yes, I only found the story late last night, so I didn't put much thought into it.
And, you know, you go search around online, you do find, well, like YouTube especially, there was a whole trend for a while there of people who, you know, got out of prison making videos showing how they'd crafted things and, you know, cooked with stingers and electricity and shit like that. And
oh, man, those guys fascinate the shit out of me, man. How they came up with certain things.
You know, I'm sure in the right hands, somebody taking apart a laptop could do a lot of harm, but that's what I'm saying. You know, you make them check the things in and out. I mean, and the problem there is probably not so much the capability as it is funding it, because you basically have to have people in the prison who that's their job, you know, is managing that kind of stuff. The problem is making them use word processors is probably worse than just giving them a pen and paper, because those
probably
things are
faster with a pen and paper.
Right?
You get better backup.
I mean, if you were saying all you can use are these antiquated word processors, I'd be keeping hard copy of everything. Type it all out, because you're not going to trust a floppy disk, and you're not going to trust anything. But, last year, state judicial officials changed court rules to require anyone filing briefs, petitions, and motions to use 14-point Times New Roman font. quote, it's going to violate our rights to the court because y'all don't comply with getting rid of the word processors because the word processor only has one font and one size, unquote, Fitch said. Quote, it doesn't come with different sizes and fonts, so if you're actually printing out briefs that the court won't take in, where does that leave us, unquote? He's got a good point. He actually has a really good point. If you're saying you have to use 14-point Times New Roman, then the court needs to provide word processors. But again, strip down hardware that it can only be used for writing and typing and stuff like that. I mean, that seems like an easy thing to solve. So that one's kind of a bitch of, you know, saying you can only use this but not providing the hardware to do it. He's got an argument there.
Yeah, with the updated, you've just mandated it where the prison system has to update itself.
Yeah.
Despite the rule, court spokesperson Mary Ann Spoto said the courts wouldn't reject the filing because of a failure to adhere to font size. I mean, yeah, I guess you could have an exemption, but that's the problem, right? Is if you don't have the exemption of, unless you're in prison, then in that case, we'll let you use whatever the word processor you have spits out. If you don't have that in writing in the rules, this is just somebody saying something. We all know what that's worth.
Yep.
Quote, they're so used to the courts being very specific and particular about how they file, he said. Why would I put all that work into it and only get denied because I don't have a machine that produces that font? That's why Fitch hopes he'll prevail, but he won't start fighting even if he loses. Quote, when I went to my juvenile waiver hearing, everybody was just talking over my head. I didn't know what nothing meant. I didn't know what they were talking about. All I knew was I walked out of there with $1 million bail, and I told myself that'd be the last time I ever go to a room and I don't know what's going on, said Fitch. Fitch became a paralegal behind bars. He can now even write legislation. Quote, they should put a drop box at the State House where you can just propose legislation, he said. I'd fill it up every week. Yeah, sure. Why do you think they don't, buddy? Because there'd be a lot of people filling up every week. Okay, so what Al Hazard was talking about in the IRC was image recognition from drones. That's why he was talking about chimneys showing up in the recapture feeds. Rooftops and chimneys and bridges and stuff like that. And that makes sense that they would be trying to do that, but... So, I mean, he's got a point about them forcing them to use, you know, not allowing them to use, you know, modern word, you know, writing tools, but at the same time requiring fonts and stuff like that. And yeah. Good on him for educating himself in prison. That's got to be rough. Yeah.
That tip of the hat for that one. Yeah, if you went in a fucking retard and educated yourself up, I mean, at least he's serving his time well.
Yeah, making use of it, but I mean,
he's making it his time and not the state's time,
and that's
the best way to do it.
And he's got a real point about the whole digital divide while you're in prison. I mean, that's got to be a, I mean, like you know, if you went in the '90s and came out today, I mean, that's got to be a head trip. And of course, you're not going to be young anymore, so you're not going to be able to just you know learn it, you know. So, but I mean, wow.
Well. I wouldn't even know how to make a fucking phone call on a smartphone.
Well,
bad, but it's true.
I've had to explain it to elderly people before, are you? So I think I could help you out if I had to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, that's how much I've avoided phones.
You usually tap the little icon that looks like a phone, and then you tap the one that looks like a dial pad, and guess what'll come up on the screen?
I'm sure I'd puzzle it out, you know. I do enjoy a good game, but nothing about that technology appeals to me whatsoever. And the more I see people just walking around with their heads down, looking at these fucking stupid square things in their hand, the more I know I've made the right decision.
Well, you know, it's funny because I've got all, you know, of course I got to keep up with all this stuff for work. And that may not be as true as I say it is. I may not have to keep up with everything for work, but I feel like I should. So, you know, modern tablets, touch screens, keep up with all of it.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, man, there are times where just busting out the Commodore 64 and playing around with that is so much better. I have been enjoying playing retro games on emulators and This stupid little Game & Watch, Legend of Zelda Gaming Watch. I've sunk more time into this thing lately than just about any damn thing else. And yeah, it's the first two Zelda games from the NES and the first one off the Game Boy. And you know what? I'm having more fun with that than I have been any modern PC game in years. And, you know, I don't get it, but maybe that's age showing, maybe it's just nostalgia, but I've been getting less and less interested in the modern stuff, and like I said, busting out the retro gear sometimes is a lot of fun. And
some of it's nostalgia, and some of it is how much of a modern game is a reskin of another modern game.
Well, basically all first-person shooters are the same anymore. You know, how many times do you play Call of Duty?
Yeah.
So, I could see pulling up Zelda just because it's different than the current new game that you're playing.
I mean, you guys have been going back and playing some of the older Baldur's Gate and Divinity and stuff like that.
I'm playing the new Mount & Blade.
Yeah.
But I'm not playing it right. I'm playing it how I want to play. Don't give two flying fucks about what's happening in the kingdom. I'm not working towards peace. You know, I'm out there ripping and raping and piracy, man. I'm all about the slaving.
So I don't know. I mean,
I'm going to pick up the new Baldur's Gate, I think.
Okay. Good point and example. The Mac I'm using to record the show right now, I was messing around with some different screens because I'm going to be redoing my desk, and so I wanted to hook one of them up and test it. And so I swapped out a 1080p for a 2K curved screen, and the KVM I've got it plugged into doesn't pick up its resolutions correctly, but I can just tell it use 1080p, and it's fine, right, because it scales it correctly. But for some reason, this Mac does not want to pick up the resolutions correctly. And it just, the scaling options it gives me are just text size small, text size big. There's no way to fix the resolution and get the refresh rate back off 30 because it has detected it, and that is what it shall be. And I found you can hold down the option key and get it to show you some more options. It does not show a standard 1080p resolution because it has decided this screen is not capable of it. And it's like, you know what? Fuck you. I should be able to just type in whatever resolution I want and have it try it. And you used to be able to do that back in the day. And now all these modern machines, because they're so damned insistent.
Plug and play. I know better than you.
Yeah, but the problem is when you don't, I've got no recourse to fix it. So, anyways, that's my annoyance. I've got another KVM to swap out, and that'll probably should fix the issue. Because it's supposed to support like 4K 60 or something like that, which they're not even a 4 fucking K screen. So, but anyways. Funny story on screens, but I'll tell you guys after the show. That's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, El Hazar, Cyberlard, Psychros, Madman, myself, and Sardonyx. Madman, closing thoughts.
So are you? That thing and not on the air, was it the same people that killed Patton?
Sorry, Madman, I'm not following you.
Oh, I'll get with you after the show because you said you didn't want to talk about it, so I was going to make a potted reference that made you talk about it.
Well, my internet's going in and out, so it's hard to hear you guys sometimes.
Are you closing thoughts?
Yeah, my internet's going in and out, so it's hard to hear you guys sometimes.
All right, sound effects, Tom.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine.
It's just naked, fat, black, crippled dykes are hard to find.